Today on Straight Talk Africa, we look at the opportunities and challenges ahead of the one-year-old administration led by Ethiopian Prime Minister Dr. Abiy Ahmed. That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Sheka Sali, and today we are discussing the opportunities and challenges ahead of the one-year-old Ethiopian government under the direction of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed begins his second year in power with a new challenge, keeping his promise to make the 2020 elections free and fair, despite rising political violence. My colleague, Paul Ndiho, has more on the story.
Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's first year in office was marked by a series of popular reforms. He tapped women to head leadership positions, signed peace deals, most notably with long-time foe Eritrea. He has cracked down on corruption. Not surprising, Prime Minister Ahmed is generating worldwide headlines. Time magazine recently named him as one of the 100 most influential people in 2019, in part for his leadership style and for doing what a lot of people thought was impossible. Ahmed called for an end to the repressive, exclusionary governance that had plunged the country into turmoil. Ethiopian journalist Eskinder Nega is among hundreds of prisoners released. He says Prime Minister Ahmed should continue to work towards promoting democracy and expanding political reforms.
Does the new Prime Minister want the system? Does he want to bring, you know, genuine democracy to the country? He has said so. But in the final analysis, he'll be measured not by what he says, but he'll be measured by what he does. So he has to walk the talk.
A surge in ethnic violence in Ethiopia along the border areas of Gedeo and West Guji regions has driven nearly 1 million people from their homes.
Seen an awful lot of people, probably more than 750,000 people, having to move in the face of violence in a very short space of time. So they've moved to public buildings, schools, training centres, as well as being hosted by families in the area where to which they've moved.
Violence is threatening to undermine Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's call for unity in the country. It's also overshadowing the popular liberal measures he's announced since coming to power.
We came here because we were attacked. We left our village empty-handed to save our lives. We travel and spend 3 days in the bushes to get here.
The 42-year-old Ahmed was appointed by the ruling Ethiopia's People's Revolutionary Democratic Front as it sought to ease ethnic tensions and appeal to disfranchised youth.
He is restoring rule of law in the country so that the Ethiopian people will have confidence in the system, in the judicial system, in the security system, and in the government as a whole.
Since becoming Prime Minister, he has met publicly with the newly freed political prisoners and held repeated meetings with Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki to negotiate a July 2018 agreement re-establishing relations following a brutal 1998 to 2000 border war. In a historic move, the Prime Minister appointed Sahel Work Zewde as the country's first female president and several other women to senior government positions. These positions are a significant symbolic and social influence, especially for young women.
Women's political participation, to me as well, is beyond cabinet positions. It's participation at all levels and the participation of women who have never been in politics before. Women as voters, women as candidates, women as members of civil society and opinion makers, women in media. All of this works towards meaningful women's political participation.
New elections are slated for 2020, but some opposition parties are casting doubt on whether the government will be fully prepared to safely conduct a free, fair and credible elections next year. An election that Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is hoping will be the crown jewel of the reforms that he's promoting and defending. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us in the studio today are two distinguished guests, Simeginish Yekoye Mengesha, a journalist and media researcher, and she's also known as Lile. Joseph Badwaza is a human rights activist and senior program officer at Freedom House. And last but not least is Elias Wondimu, publisher, editor, and the chief executive officer of Tsehai Publishers, based at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, California. He joins us from the VOA Bureau in Los Angeles. We invited the Ethiopian ambassador to the United States, but due to scheduling conflict, he could not join us on today's program. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Okay. You're most welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning, Elias.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Shaka.
In your particular case, of course, this is not the first time. You've been on this program several times.
Yes, thank you.
How is the City of the Angels?
It misses you, but it's beautiful and good. Thank you. Thank you.
Have you met other angels since I left?
we have, as the city of Los Angeles, I think we're doing well.
Very interesting, very interesting. Let me go to Simeginish. Of course, thank you so much for coming to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having me.
When were you last back in Ethiopia?
The last time I was there was 2014.
So you have not actually been able to be back home under the watch of the new dazzling prime minister?
Not yet, and mostly because of personal reasons. I was in school, so I haven't had a chance to be back yet.
You know, when we used to be young students, so boys and girls and stuff like that, there used to be this concept of report cards.
Mm-hmm.
What about extending the same privilege to measure at least the performance of the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed? He's been in power, after all, for a year now. How does he strike you?
Not only me, but he striked most Ethiopians, especially in the beginning. When he came, he made a lot of promises. Everyone was happy, as you have seen, in the people came out on the streets. He promised to unify the country. He promised, he made a lot of promises. And not only promises, he also brought some changes, like made peace with neighboring countries, released prisoners, the diaspora is now coming back. And these are like very significant changes. But at the same time, as you said, looking 1 year after, still there are so many challenges. He needs to work on challenges that are very crucial, in like the rule of law, like the economy, the unemployment. These are very big challenges that are going to challenge him going forward.
When you talk about the pledges he made, what has he been able to deliver so far, in as far as some of those major promises are concerned?
I would say he made a lot of promises and raised a lot of expectation among the public, and he has not been able to deliver most of them yet, especially when it comes to internal issues.
Mm-hmm.
He does not have... let us look at the root causes of the grievance and the protests we had before he came. Most of them were not created by Abiy administration, or not even only by EPRDF. Most of them have been rolling for hundreds of years. But they never came out because there was no platform. People didn't have an opportunity to express all these grievances. People were repressed. Now the politics is open. Prisoners are released. Political parties are back into the country. with all these opening platforms, people are able to ask questions, demand justice, demand change. But how is he addressing that? He does not have a clear roadmap yet. He has not provided people with how or a strategy how he's going to take people to his promises. And that's a big gap that is challenging him, and also bringing all these security, unemployment or economy issues that we are we can mention later. So Abiy so far has been avoiding taking positions, I would say, and have been trying to please everybody. But I guess it's time to take action and be in control of the security, because especially now the security, which is highly fueled by ethnic tension, is it has spread. Like, we are seeing communal violences. We are even seeing elite militias. People are uncertain. There is a lot of uncertainty, insecurity, and violence. And security, which should be in the which should be a government agency, is now going in unknown group, in the hands of unknown groups, and this is very dangerous. And that is something that should be really addressed immediately.
I see. Mm-hmm. What about you, Yosef? Do you agree with your sister?
Let me say this. Sorry. I think a good way of assessing, or as you put it, issuing the report card for the tenor, the one-year tenor of the Prime Minister and his team, would be taking a step back and looking at what the state was at in terms of its trajectory, in terms of what the advent of this reformist-minded EPRDF leaders could have averted in terms of avoiding the catastrophe that would have followed. If you look at the tensions that were boiling in the country, the protests that were taking place virtually in all parts of the country, you have a government nominally really strong with very sophisticated security and military powers, but unable to control popular protests that have been pent up over many decades of really, really repressive rule. Mm. So if you look at from the point of view of those reformist leaders within the EPRDF leadership coming up with some sort of accommodating views of the demands of the protesters, and also from the point of self-preserving EPRDF, I think the judgment so far could be, and I believe should be, fair, particularly if you look at the first bold step measures that the new government took in terms of freeing all political prisoners, in terms of opening up the media and launching on a really comprehensive review of legal and institutional reforms is really commendable. But like Lily was saying, there have been a number of shortcomings in terms of living up to people's expectations. I think there have been a lot of desire on the part of citizens to see a country which, despite all its complex problems, lifted up into some sort of calm and stability. And I think that is not a very realistic wish in terms of people, but what the government, I think, should do in terms of communicating what they have been able to achieve and what they have in store in terms of restoring public faith, in terms of reforming institutions, in terms of changing the way their security, their military, their police are operating, in terms of bringing back public faith in the civil service, and most importantly, I think, dealing with these recurring incidents of ethnic and communal violence through a political and legal means that can sustain the positive feelings that people are still extending, I believe, towards the new government. So I would reserve judgment in terms of actually asserting that the reform has serious shortcomings to the extent of derailing it. But I think with better communication, with proactive engagement, with articulating a compelling message as to what the use, how expectations are going to be managed, I think there is still a chance for Abiy and his government to actually transition this really bold political experiment, which has been unthinkable a couple of years ago in the way, looking at the way that the country has been going to. So that is, I think, my assessment.
Have you had an opportunity to be back on the ground during the period that Abiy Ahmed has been the new kid on the block?
Yes, I have been able to go back after 9 years in exile. I have been back in January 2009, and I was able to engage with a number of actors as part of my job, including civil society leaders, government officials, media practitioners, and regular folks, both inside and outside of Addis Ababa, and trying to get a feel of how people are managing and how people are assessing these really dramatic changes that have been taking place over the past year in terms of the opening up of the political space. But I think what struck me really most was that the environment that people are experiencing in terms of experiencing views freely. You look at the number of FM radio shows and the variety of topics that they are really allowed to entertain. I still acknowledge that there is a number of excessive concentration in urban centers, particularly in Addis Ababa, in terms of extending those free discourses on major political and socio-economic topics. But the air of freedom on the part of people is really very visible. I'm saying this because I have had the opportunity to work with human rights activists for many years, even after coming here to the United States. Mm. When you meet these human rights activists, even outside of Ethiopia, during the reign of Meles, during even Haile Mariam, there is this instinctive reservation to hold their views in terms of not saying.
So people are cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, critical.
We'll get to that and more later. Let me go to the City of the Angels. Good morning, Elias.
Good morning. Good morning, Chaka.
How are you again?
Wonderful. Thank you. It's a wonderful discussion to hear. And,
I know that you've been back not once, but the last time I checked, perhaps about twice, correct?
Yes, that's very good. Correct.
And have you seen any reason as to perhaps why you should change your mind about the expectations that you first had or heard in as far as Abiy Ahmed is concerned?
No, I don't. Actually, it gave me hope than despair, because Dr. Abiy has inherited 27 years of really stratified political system and an entrenched ethnocentric and party-based administration. So all that really is a system that you can see from the Qabale to the parliament or even to the ministerial levels, that the political structure is still intact in many ways than one. But at the same time, within that constraint, what he was able to do is incredibly amazing. And I have traveled even at the first, my first trip. On my second trip, I have traveled extensively. I have talked to political actors, former prime ministers, even including Prime Minister Haile Mariam, Fikre Selassie Ugdurus, and many other political leaders also. The expectation is that I understand what your guests are saying. There is an expectation that there is a way that, for example, that we there is a sense of that understanding that we, if we, when something happens, there is a certain mechanism or methods that we are accustomed to solve those problems. Especially, for example, when there is some kind of a political demonstration or displacement. Or killings. And the way we know how those issues were solved in the past was not what Dr. Abiy's government is trying to do. And because of it, there are many disappointments, I understand. But at the same time, if you forward yourself another couple of months and how this, these particular issues were solved was incredibly amazing. And of course, there are many issues that needs to be solved. And as I said, that the entrenched political structure is still intact. So it will take time. 1 year is not enough. But change, if you ask me,
change, of course, is a process, not exactly. An incident.
It is not.
Or an event.
And if you exactly, that's very true. And if you see, just to go back to your first question, if you see the report, if you ask me to give the report card for 1 year action that the Prime Minister has taken, and I think it's an A+ because of that. Some of the promises he made.
It's an A plus.
I would put an A+. The reason
let's
is
go
that
to let's use the kind of language that is very easily accessible to the vast majority of our audience. If I were to ask you that on the scale, for example, of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest and 10 being the highest, what would you give?
I would give 10. Let me tell you why.
Really?
Yes. Perfect. I will give him perfect. The reason
for a man who has been actually portrayed by one of your fellow panelists, Smegnish, as someone who seems to be trying to be all things to all people.
I don't think that's a good assessment or a true assessment. It might we all have a perspective how we see things. I have been in exile for 24 years. And if you go back and see what was happening a year ago in Ethiopia, today Ethiopia is supposed to be Rwanda or Rwanda-like kind of killings. Ethiopia has the highest concentration of prisoners of political opponents. Today, Ethiopia has none or almost very limited. All the political exiles are returned.
What do you mean? None? How do you classify people like my friend Bereket Simon?
So the Bereket Simon kind of personalities are different. The reason is that those are people who are in power at that time, and a year ago, the political prisoners who are the terrorists of the people who are deemed as terrorists, the journalists who are imprisoned. Those are the people I'm talking about, the ones who are accused in the past misappropriation of funds or political impropriety. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the ones that before that. And for 27 years, we have never expected this kind of transformation to come. And imagine, you have to look back in the history of Ethiopia, especially the past 40 years or even the last 27 years. If you really examine it, There has been many time bombs that have been buried in Ethiopian historiography or in the political scene, and that is what you see being exploded in every now and then. And we agree that I think the way they are solved, the way they are addressed, are not in a way that will satisfy all of us. But at the same time, still we have a nation that is peaceful, relatively. There is a relative peace. There is a relative democratic movement. I think it's up to the society or the citizenry to take this and take it to the next level. And I think one thing that I really wanted to emphasize is that I'm not saying that there is no problem. There are problems, but I think we are in a better place so that we can move ahead. And Ethiopia owe around $20 billion for China. What he has done in the last couple of years of dealing with the $123 million of debt reduction, I think those are the things that are needed for Ethiopia to move slowly but surely to a better place. And I think he's helping us to do that. That's why I give him an A+ than otherwise.
I see. Ms. Meganeshe, do you agree with some people who look at the Ethiopian prime minister as perhaps a new bleed of African leadership? And in fact, there are some who even go further, that you are looking at somebody that is probably is the beacon of hope for African democracy. This, of course, given that Ethiopia has never experienced democracy even for a second.
I do agree with people who say he's a beacon of hope. Yes, I agree with what Elias said, that we are in a better place than we were even 3 years ago, 27 years ago. Like all, if you look at all our history, this has never been, this is an opportunity for us. And yes, Abiy could be seen as a beacon of hope. I also agree that changing a democratic system to democracy is a long process. It doesn't happen overnight. Mm. That's why I refrain from giving a grade, or not even an A+. But I would refrain from giving any grade because, as I said, I just graduated, and you don't get a grade until the end of the semester. Of course, you accumulate grades, but the final grade is going to be at the end of the semester.
Yeah, but we are talking about. A gentleman who has actually completed a semester. We're talking about AI here.
I wouldn't call it a semester because it's still early for him.
In fact, it's an academic year.
It's still early for him because, yes, he has delivered a few achievements. Like he opened up the platforms. He opened for people to come back. Prisoners are out. People are now expressing their views, their demands, and this is very... This is what we have been struggling for. This is what we have been asking. And
but on the basis of what you know so far, would you agree with your brother Elias, for example, that he deserves a perfect score?
I do not agree with that because he said, yes, we are in a better place, but still there are things that are even becoming worse, like the internal displacement. Yes, there were displacements even before Abiy's administration, but are now they are not even happening more because the security he has not been able to put his hand on the security. He has not even been able to manage the intelligence, the military, the way he needs to. There has been a lot of unemployment. Now the economy, the
business
is weak.
You can really grade him on the scale of 1 to 10.
That's what
I'm saying. 1 being the lowest and 10 being the highest.
That's what I was saying. I would refrain from grading him. Yes, he has accumulated points. If, for example, you ask me how did he do in foreign relations, yes, he has achieved maybe 8 or 9. If you ask me how he did in opening democracy, I would give him 10 even. That's very impressive. So in different aspects, I would give him grades. But
this
overall...
This is a man when he was a kid. The last time I checked about at least his history, he actually was a bridge builder. He was someone, as a young person, who was able to bring his brothers together when they were quarreling and what have you. And in fact, is someone, frankly, that has the ability of bringing people together.
You can see it reflected,
for example, in the manner in which he definitely brought, you know, peace or normal relationships between Addis Ababa and Asmara.
As I said, Abiy has a great personality and he has achieved a lot. And he has a unique personality. He represents so many members of the society. He, as you said, achieved, brought peace in the region, tried to make peace with neighboring countries and opened up democracy. But at the same time, he still lacks control. That's what I really am struggling with. He still needs to have a roadmap that shows how he's going to deliver his promises. That is very big. Security is very important. Rule of law is very important. Now election is coming up. Mm. And for people to come out and elect, they need security. To have fair and democratic election, people need to feel safe enough to come out and elect. So this is important. Unemployment is very important. Like, there is youth is the majority of the population. And if this youth is not put in a productive environment, they are the ones that are mobilized for violence.
But he's trying, because the last time I checked again, Ethiopia happens to be one of the fastest growing economies, not only on the African continent, but in the world.
Yes, that has been the case. But recently, actually, economy has been slower because government used to be the biggest spender in the country. Now the government is holding those projects because of like the corruptions they are dealing with.
The single largest employer.
Exactly.
The single largest contractor.
When the government holds money, that creates a problem in the country. There is no money. People are losing their jobs. Factories are not producing to their capacity. And they are even laying off people. Prices are increasing. This even fuels the frustration and the grievances.
I see. Let me come to you, Joseph, my brother Joseph. What about you? Very, very simply, before we go for a break, on the scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest and 10 being the highest.
Okay.
How would you?
Let me just say one thing and then I'll put that scale to test. I think in terms of measuring the ultimate success for me of this democratic experiment over the past 1 year is at the end of the day measured by the extent to which this leadership is able to guarantee security for Ethiopians. And also, I think probably equally important is it in their ability to transition to a more permanent, fully mandated democratic system, which can function regardless of the current leadership.
What about freedom, really? Again, go back to freedom. You work in Freedom House. You're talking about a country. Until Abiy Ahmed came to the scene, no one probably, unless you were one of those top guys like Bereket Simon, could claim to have a right to own an opinion that was different from the ruling elite.
Absolutely.
But now people are free to express themselves. There are private radio stations here and there, and you name it.
Absolutely. I think it's only fair and I think prudent to acknowledge that. I think
that's part of a building block of democracy.
Absolutely. The EPRDF at its peak was one huge repressive machine trying to have monopoly over every form of public life, including the type of opinion you hold, the type of investments you make and the political party you support. So as compared to that, the beginning of this administration is really, really in terms of what they begin to exercise is really commendable.
I see.
But I think, like I was trying to say, the ultimate measure of the success for me is putting institutions in place that could function beyond the current personalities.
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, if there is anything not only Ethiopia, but perhaps the entire African continent needs are strong institutions, not strong men or women.
Well,
on that note, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
I'm Vincent Macquarie, inviting you to the new look Africa 54, premiering soon. Same great team, but with new energy and a new host, Esther Gbuyiwot.
Hi, and welcome. We'll bring you a closer look at politics, technology, health, and so much more, backed by VOA correspondents across Africa and the world, including perspectives from Washington, D.C., and Africans achieving abroad.
Same time, same channels.
Stay tuned.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
We appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. And you can also watch us live on the VOA mobile app. Now let's look at what's up for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, tensions persist at the border between Rwanda and Uganda. The area is closed, and Rwandans complain that they are being persecuted on Ugandan soil. France is warning its citizens not to travel near the border due to the current strife between the two countries. The Rwandan and Ugandan standoff on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are talking about the opportunities and the challenges that lie ahead of the one-year-old Ethiopian government of Abiy Ahmed. Our guests are Lile Yekoye Mengesha, a journalist and media researcher, Joseph Badwaza, a human rights activist and senior program officer at Freedom House, and Elias Wondimu, publisher, editor, and Chief Executive Officer of Tsehai Publishers, who joins us live from the VOA Bureau in Los Angeles. Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you again, my sister. What is it that you would like to have seen so far under Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's watch that you haven't seen, and that should be something also that you have heard a lot of Ethiopians talk about or feel very, very profoundly concerned about?
The most pressing issue for me, which I wish I had seen or which I wished hadn't happened, is the amount of displacement, internal displacement, and the amount of insecurity people are feeling all over the country.
All over the country?
In most places, like in Amhara.
I have heard about Addis Ababa, the capital.
No, in Amhara, in the south, in Oromia, like there are displacements. Like right now, 2.3 million people are internally displaced because of violence.
this is the highest number in the country.
And who is behind that violence?
So when you have communal violence, when you have unknown groups taking action, when you have mob justice, people fear, people are displaced, people are being attacked. There are days every day. You hear like 20 people died, 5 people died, 30 people died here and there. It's not even a big news anymore because it's happening every day. These are very alarming and concerning issues, which for me is the most pressing issue, I would say, that ABI needs to work on. As I said, security is the base, like as I said, for the coming election. Security is the base for him even to be able to carry out all the promises to build the roadmap we expect him to show us. So that is that's like the main thing for me, which I haven't seen, and I wish I see. I want to see him being in control of the security.
So you pretty much feel like there is no one really in charge of the store.
That's how it feels like in most cases. When you see the news, when you see, when you hear what's happening, that's how it feels like, that he's not really in charge.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And we go to Tedla. Good afternoon, Tedla from New York. How are you?
Good afternoon, Shaka.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today, Tedla?
Very well, thank you. You know, I'm not a generous professor who gives 10 for Abi. Let me tell you one thing, Shaka. I've been saying all along. The displacement is not a communal violence, like some of them over there are saying. It is a well-orchestrated ethnic cleansing. We have to call it by its name. Ethnic cleansing is going in Ethiopia after Abiy captures power, and those militias are the Oromo militias who are expanding their border, displacing 300,000, 400,000 people from Gedeo now who are thrown out in the jungle. Children are crying. There is no food. Rainy season is coming. If someone who is in power, like Abiy, is not saying or showing some power base, forget about it. He cannot be our prime minister or anybody else. He has to save lives. Go to southern Shawa a few weeks ago. Oromo militias are extending their power. Don't hide the fact. The fact is, the Oromos are expanding their border by displacing everybody. They are now claiming Addis Ababa as their capital. We should not play this softball. It is a hard game. It is a tribal, it is not a communal conflict. It is one ethnic group tried to dominate by force like TPLF did boundary expansion. And the Oromos are doing it now. Let's not play a soft game. This is a dangerous thing. Iskender Nagga has said it. You cannot take over Addis Ababa because we, the citizens, have to vote for our representatives. This is a fact. How could you give a 10 for a leader who cannot even control his country? I cannot believe that.
Now, Tedla, what about you? What would you actually give him?
Let me tell you. I'm honestly, I will give him a C. You know why? He is part of the system. Abiy is not a new man. He was a spy on the old EPRDF system. He's not an angel. Under his watch, many people also lost life, directly or indirectly, I don't know. But Abiy has said the past 27 years was bad. We have to move to a new chapter. But Tedla, this new chapter, as the lady says, there is no security.
Tedla,
there is no army.
Tedla, you mentioned the Oromo community.
Yes.
The Oromo community, at least from what I can see, happens to be the single largest ethnic community in Ethiopia, correct?
Yeah, what does that mean?
No, I'm simply asking you. And we also know that Abiy Ahmed happens to be a member of the Oromo community. Is that correct?
True.
Are you insinuating here that perhaps that community actually has tacit approval from the Ethiopian Prime Minister?
That might be the case, but he claims himself after he came from Rwanda. Rwandans will never say we are Hutu or Tutsis, we are Rwandese. And he said we Ethiopians have to do the same. And then all of a sudden,
Tedla,
he goes back and plays his tribal card again.
Tedla, if you were to talk to me from the deepest better part of the bottom of your Ethiopian heart and soul. Do you sincerely believe that the Prime Minister is behind what you are talking about? And in order for you to tell us about that, you need to have incontrovertible evidence. Do you have incontrovertible evidence
of that? The Prime Minister is not directly involved, but he is not stopping this violence. And then we are believing that this man is, you know what one peasant said from the northern Shawa? A simple peasant. He was asked, how do you evaluate the Prime Minister? He said, Prime Minister is a smart man. He has a very nice talk. Practice is zero. So we are dying here, and he's talking about some flowery words all over the place. So he should be a man who delivers, who should walk the talk. He's talking, but he's not delivering. That's what I'm saying.
I understand. So essentially what you are saying is that Abiy actually has been transformed, or he has transformed himself into a conventional politician, because politicians talk the talk without walking the talk.
That's what I said, Shaka. I agree with you 100%.
Thank you very much. Let me go to the other side of the continent, because Ted Lakem comes from Ethiopia, which of course is on the eastern part of the continent. Let's go to West Africa, and we have Tafa from the Republic of Ghana. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Tafa, can you hear me?
Hello, good evening, Tafa.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today, Tafa?
Well, by the grace of Almighty God, we are doing well.
So what is your question or comment?
Oh, Shaka, my comment is up to do with what I listened from our guest from Ethiopia. Shaka, what I learned from Abiy Ahmed is that when he was selected as a prime minister, the move with the alacrity, he released all the political prisoners and those who were chased out of the country, he allowed them to come back home. Since then, I have confidence in that young man. My humble appeal to my brothers in Ethiopia to give him a chance, because there's no way he can change the system that existed for two decades within a year or two. There's no, it's not possible. This is the time he needed. Shaka, just 3 days ago, I was watching news. I saw some rebels from Somali in Ethiopia laying down their arms, ready to join the Ethiopian military. So if what our friend in New York said is true, then we have to blame the Ethiopian military, the security agencies. They have to deal with these situations. But to jump any conclusion now, or anybody try to bring this young man in, I think it's not being fair. This man is making Ethiopians proud. He's making all of us proud as Africans, because he's doing something different, which nobody ever thinks it will happen to Ethiopia. But it's happening today. Ethiopia is free. So I'm begging them, in the name of Almighty Allah, they should give him a chance. They should help him so that the Ethiopia will move on. Thank you very much, Shaka. God bless you.
You're most welcome, Tafa. You're most welcome. Let's go to Adam. Good evening, Adam, from Ethiopia. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Oh, thank you, Shaka. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Where are you calling from specifically in Ethiopia, Adam?
I'm calling from the Addis.
From the capital, Addis?
Yes.
What is it like downtown Addis? What is the mood like?
It's really good. Everything is relaxed. And this opportunity, I would like to thank Mr. Elias Wondum. He's really one of the great Ethiopians.
Adam, are you there?
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, you were saying something about Elias, the guy that lives in the city of the angels.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that it's good to see him.
I see. So you've been watching the program and listening to the program, Adam?
Yes. I have been, you're pretty popular in Addis, so everybody watching.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah.
You think if I came to Addis and I happened to be thirsty, I would be showered with drinking water?
Well, you should try. It's going to be a huge crowd.
Next time I come, in the region, I'll look for you, Adam.
That would be amazing. Please.
The last time I was there, I was staying at the Addis Ababa Sheraton. Another time, I remember many, many years ago, actually in the 90s, I stayed at a place called Guillaume Hotel. And I was given the suite, they said, that used to belong to Emperor Haile Selassie.
Yeah, of course. A lot changes, Shaka, a lot changes. So
are you happy, Adam? Are you happy?
Yes.
And what about your colleagues, your friends, and what have you? Very happy?
Yeah, we're very happy. And, you know, we have been for the last 30 years or whatever, 20 years, and, you know, we have been through the, you know, the region. So it's a radical change. So I think let's give him certain times until he settle, you know.
So
I know that there is a concern, especially regarding to the security, but it's really good. He's doing fine. I mean,
What about people seem to be complaining a lot about stuff that is going on in Addis Ababa. You know, people are being forcibly removed from their land, their houses, and all that kind of stuff. Is that true? Is that something that you have seen or you have experienced?
Yes, Shaka, what happened was, you know, a couple of years ago, like 3-4 years ago, Haile Selassie publicly says that we should ban Facebook. And then you have no idea. Everybody was all over him. Why he say that? Why he say that? Because there was a reason. Most of them
We've lost the line, Adam. Sorry, due to some technical difficulties, we seem to have lost the line, but thank you so much for joining us, however briefly, from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Let's go to the City of the Angels, and Elias, how are you?
Thank you. So it's wonderful to hear.
Did you know that you have an admirer in Addis Ababa by the name of Adam?
I don't know him in person, but I think it's a blessing to hear.
What is it that you did to him or you did for him that he should do almost worship you, really?
I think everything I did is for Ethiopia, and it includes, and of course, to the humanity in general, so that we know our history and so that we understand our politics and what happened to us and how we see ourselves in this context. And I have never expected this to be people to know what I have done, because it's in the silo that we work here in exile. But to hear that people have read the work that we have published and heard what we have said, it gives us a tremendous satisfaction, and I'm blessed to hear the caller's comment. Maybe let me go, just using this moment, let me go back to address some of the issues our sister presented earlier when she talked about the unemployment. When I was in Ethiopia, I was there in the past 6 months. I was there for 4 months in 2 trips. And one thing that I have noticed is the number of young people in the country standing around or working. And as she very well said, there's a huge number of unemployment. And that employment was not created by in 1 year what happened in the first year. It was created by the past 27 years of mismanagement. Ethiopia borrowed, as I mentioned earlier, more than $20 billion from China. But that amount of money was not really didn't translate into work for the Ethiopian youth. It went, so many of it actually went to pockets of individuals who are the former government leaders. And I think to the credit of the Prime Minister, in his recent speech, he mentioned that he brought about $13 billion from foreign governments.
And this is unheard of. None of the, our premiers in the past 50 years were able to bring this kind of money. This $13 billion that he talked about, it was not a promise. He brought them back to Ethiopia. That's why we see an economic balance now. And I'm sure that the plan is just to implement them into a workforce to create factories or institutions that will hire these young people. And these young people could also be need to be, what is the word, technically trained or educated better. Because one of the things I have done when I was in Ethiopia, I went to several universities, talked to university students and even professors. And some of the things you see is that the number of universities increased in Ethiopia. But the quality of education, the quality of training that is being given to them is really watered down to a point where it's actually scary. And I think one of the things that he's trying to address is that. The second issue that was talked about earlier by the caller from New York is Tadla, I think. Was the issue of security. And I think if we, for example, when we see a government or some security forces or unknown military forces took action in a certain community, then two things happened. For example, the Shoah incident was that there's a military group claimed to be an OLF or a Armored Liberation Front went into and killed some Amara groups. If a government or even the population in that neighborhood starts to defend themselves, not to defend, but attack the others, or especially their own neighbors, then that's how you start a civil war within the nation. And I think what has happened in this particular incident is the people who came and killed them are not the people who live with them. These are people who are known, who nobody knows where they came from. This has happened in the past in Ethiopia. It happened in Jimma when the Muslims killed the Christians, supposedly that to convert them into Christianity. Those things were inflicted on us so that we react with the same or more actions, and then to ensue some kind of a civil war structure. Which the good thing about Ethiopia is that people are not reacting with the same passion and anger, number one. Number two, the other good thing is that I am glad that the Ethiopian government didn't came out and started shooting people. That's what the Meles government has done. That's what the Haile Mariam government has done. And one thing that we are seeing in this government is that the calmness, the very methodical kind of thinking and approaching to solve these problems has been, I think, for me, admirable. Yes, we need to see more, but I think we need to hear more from it. And I think that's what we need to do.
Thank you very much, Elias. Let me come to you, Joseph. If Abiy Ahmed were sitting in his living room in Addis Ababa watching Straight Talk Africa, and you have an opportunity to interact with him, what is it, very briefly, that you would tell or say to the Prime Minister that, yes, there are going to be elections 2020, and they are very, very important. Democracy is very important for stability. What does he need to do to make sure that the elections are credible and transparent?
I'll go back to the point I was trying to make earlier. I think it should be restoring citizens' faith in institutions. And you could do that by reforming these really draconian restrictions on genuine political participation.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. Well, on that note, our guests today were Lile Mengesha, Joseph Badwaza, and Elias Wondimu. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Ethiopia. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.